Hello, and welcome to Why Wars Happened, a weekly history podcast where we talk about what led to war in history. I'm your host, Emily Ross, and today we're going to be discussing the things that led to the American Revolution, with a focus on Virginia this season. Okay, so where we left off in the last episode was that the sickness and death in Virginia had given Virginia such a bad reputation in England that the Virginia Company had to try and make it seem like a super cool place to live, despite all the death and suffering. One of the things they did was allow the colony of Virginia to elect people to an assembly that would be in Virginia. Half of that assembly was allowed to be elected, while the other half was chosen by the governor. Democracy definitely was super cool to a lot of people in England, and it helped get people to travel to Virginia again. And remember, the Virginia Company did have to answer to a powerful council in England, and that powerful council had to answer to the King of England. But the company was making money on every sale that came and went from the colony. They wanted more people there making more things and selling more things and giving them more money from each of those sales. Okay, so now we have a colony in Virginia that has elections. The government that ruled over them was kind of like a parliament or a congress. Half of it was elected, half of it was chosen. Sometimes the king chose the people on the governor's council, but he was usually too busy to choose them, so it was most often the governor that chose the people on the governor's council. Those chosen by the governor were upper class and were fiercely loyal to the king and to the governor. The whole shebang answers to the Virginia Company, who owns the colony. The Virginia Company answers to a powerful council in England, and the powerful council in England answers to the King of England. The king, however, wanted complete control. But it wasn't like the 1200s. He couldn't just waltz in and claim that things were his. Plus, the colony of Virginia was establishing that icky democracy. Remember that King James literally wrote the book on how kings were supposed to deal with their subjects. It was passed down to his son, and it detailed how the king got his power from God and all of the citizens in his kingdom, including Parliament, was beneath him and he was above them. Parliament in England was becoming argumentative with the king, and the king was becoming argumentative with Parliament. James couldn't have been too happy with the Virginia Company allowing democracy to set up in the colony. He already gave the Virginia Company permission to own Virginia, and the Virginia Company was the one who set up the colony, who transported people to settle there, and who'd been running things on a day-to-day basis. But the king needed money, like, bad. As we discussed in previous episodes, he was in a ton of debt, and Virginia was producing a lot of money by growing and selling tobacco. Some of that money, actually a lot of that money, went to the Virginia Company. If the king can think of a way to kick the company out and take over, he would get all of that money, and he'd be able to more closely control what was happening in the colony. He wouldn't need to get a company to agree to anything he wanted to do. But he didn't have a reason that he could give for why he should take over the colony. Not until something horrible happened. In 1622, a massacre that was designed to eliminate all English immigrants was carried out against the colonists in Virginia. This is important to the American Revolution, not because of the massacre itself, but because the aftermath of the massacre changed the fate of the colony forever. It gave James the reason he needed to gain control of Virginia and finally make it a royal colony under the complete control of the English government. After this massacre, Virginia would no longer be owned by a company. England would create laws that Virginia couldn't turn to a company to help them fight against. England would use and bleed Virginia for as much money as it possibly could. England would be the one we rebelled against. The colony of Virginia had been at peace with the natives since one of the immigrants, John Rolfe, married Pocahontas in 1614. That was 8 years of peace and living together in harmony. The settlers were so comfortable with the natives that they often ate in each other's houses, hunted together, and professed their friendship in public events. It was said that the massacre was dreamt up by a man named Opecanco. He was the Powhatan chief, which was the tribe in the area. While Opecanco was planning the massacre, he professed his love and goodwill towards the Englishmen and declared that the sky would fall before he would do anything to end the peace between them. Just before the massacre, he had professed his love for the very people he butchered. The attack was so sudden and so unsuspected that people even loaned their boats and canoes to the natives, who then used those boats to coordinate the attacks. It was said that the evening before the slaughter, the natives came as usual to the farms with their deer, turkeys, and other food to sell. Some of the natives had been adopted by English families in Virginia, and some Englishmen had been adopted by the natives. Many of the natives, thousands of them in fact, knew that this genocide was going to take place and chose not to warn anyone or to try and stop it. Nobody except a little boy who had been adopted by an English immigrant. The native boy warned his English family, and the adoptive father made a journey as fast as possible to Jamestown to warn them of what was to come. All parts of Virginia were attacked. Anywhere where there were English immigrants, the natives fell on them in a coordinated slaughter and butchered them without mercy. Sometimes they hacked at the corpses long after the victims were dead. Babies, children, women, men, everyone. Sometimes the natives sat down to breakfast with their victims and then, after eggs and bacon, got up and butchered the entire family, children and infants included, with their own tools. The only people who were spared were those in Jamestown who had been warned and a few people who managed to fire guns at the natives as they surrounded their houses. Some were butchered in their houses before they could get to their weapons. In one case, the people in one of the houses defended themselves against 60 natives. Another story is of a Mr. Hammer, whose household had 7 men and 18 women and children. When the natives came for him and his family, they set fire to his field of tobacco to lure them out. When the men rushed from the house to put the fire out, the natives shot them full of arrows. Fortunately for the women and children, Mr. Hammer had stayed behind in the house. He had been writing a letter at that exact moment, and so he had been spared the fate of the others who were slaughtered just outside. Upon hearing their cries, he ran out to see what was happening. At once, he saw the man and his family butchered on the ground and received an arrow in his own back. He immediately turned and ran back to the house, the arrow still sticking out of his back. He barricaded the doors and windows, but the natives set fire to the house with everyone inside. They were saved by a boy in the house who grabbed a gun and fired on the natives, who then turned and fled. Once the natives were gone, Mr. Hammer, the boy, and the rest of the women and children escaped to a safer location, leaving the fallen family members behind. In all, 357 people were killed, including 6 council members. Think about the brutality of this, the horror. If this happened in your own neighborhood, if you go out and look at the streets and imagine this type of crime happened and it was senseless, no rhyme or reason to the victims, just whoever was available to kill. You would be terrified, and the immigrants were. From this point on, all of the laws and orders to make peace with the natives, to bring them into the English religion, culture, and trade, were canceled. Farms that had been too far from a town to be protected were abandoned. All attempts to live side by side were stopped. It became illegal to even try. It changed everything. The biggest point of change was in James, who now had a reason to step in and take control of the entirety of Virginia. Not only this, but the massacre of 1622 set off a war with the natives that lasted for many years. Back in England, the Virginia Company and the powerful council in England had been preparing a new charter for the king to sign. When the king's advisors got a hold of it, they advised the king not to agree to it. It was likely because it allowed for even more democracy than there already was in Virginia. We're going to bring it back just a little bit before the massacre happened. The guy who was running the powerful council in England was the same guy who was also running the Virginia Company. His name was Edwin Sands. Sands was a well-known king hater. He was going around spreading democratic ideas in England and helping democratic ideas to be discussed. The council in England ended up becoming kind of like a school for democratic ideas. When Sands started going out on the streets of England preaching this wonderful democracy that took power away from the king, James could no longer tolerate this guy. So he imprisoned Sands. Then, almost 1 year later, the massacre happened. The massacre didn't make James take control right away, but he was well on his way to this when it occurred. His imprisonment of Edwin Sands, the guy who was running the powerful council in England and who was running the Virginia Company, caused a lot of tension between the king and the Virginia Company. Now, a month after the massacre, some new members of the Virginia Company were going to be elected. James sent a list of names to them that he would like them to choose from. The company chose 2 people from the list that people could vote for, but other people not on the list were in the election as well. The king's chosen people were overwhelmingly defeated, and when the king heard about this, he flung himself into a furious passion. The king had no choice. The company had strongly rejected his control over them by electing people that weren't on his list. What was a king that was placed above all other people supposed to do to show them that he was above them and that they were his subjects? He had given them all sorts of chances to show that they understood their place in society. Well, because this wasn't the 1200s, and now kings were limited in what they could do, at least a little limited, he couldn't just cancel the charter he had already given to the Virginia Company. He had to go through legal procedures to make it legal. So he began to hunt for evidence of mismanagement by the Virginia Company. One of the ways he did this was to send for a captain named Nathaniel Butler, who had spent time in Virginia. When Captain Butler arrived at the palace, the king ordered him to write a short book about the conditions of life in Virginia and make sure to include all the dirty, terrible things. Captain Butler did this, and his book, called The Unmasking of Virginia, is one of the sources many historians use today to learn about the conditions in the colony. We know that some of it's probably exaggerated to make it look as bad as possible. We also know that a lot of things didn't need to be exaggerated. A lot of things in Virginia really were terrible. Whether it's accurate to blame the Virginia Company for these terrible living conditions is still debated, even today. But the king in the small book did blame the Virginia Company. It said that the sickness, the starving time in the early days, the complete lack of producing anything useful for England other than tobacco, and, worst of all, the massacre of 1622 was all the fault of the Virginia Company and their terrible control. The company denied all blame and wrote a response to the little book. They explained why those things happened and how it was totally not their fault. Their letter to the king and the company may have explained some things, like why Virginia was terrible for iron, glass, and other materials, why the sickness wasn't any man's fault, and why the natives had attacked them out of nowhere. But the letter couldn't undo the damage that Captain Butler's unmasking book had already done. Just 1 year after the massacre, James took another step to cancel the company's control of Virginia. He gathered a group of men who were ordered to travel to Virginia and investigate the matter for themselves. They were ordered to uncover all abuses and grievances, all wrongs and injuries done to any English immigrant, and to figure out what type of government, hint hint if the king, would be better at controlling the situation. So off to Virginia this group of men went. When they arrived just a few weeks later, they got to work interviewing people and examining every record they possibly could. They even examined the guy in the assembly who kept a record of everything. And they read private letters going out of Virginia complaining about the suffering there. After a couple of months, the group of men made the report to the king. It found that most of the people sent to live in the colony were sick, starving to death, and suffering from the attacks by the natives. It said that the people of Virginia lived in misery and extreme need, and that they were being neglected by the company who was in charge of their care. It went on to say that if the company had followed the king's instructions given to them in the charters from the beginning, the colony never would have ended up in such suffering conditions. Therefore, the colony would be saved and the people spared if the king would take control. But the king, as wise and generous as he was, didn't take control of the colony, not just yet. He instead offered a compromise to the Virginia Company. If they would cancel their own charter, he would grant them a new one in which they could keep all of their operations going that they had in place, like if certain farms made money for them, they could keep that. If they were paid money from all sales of things coming out of Virginia, they could keep getting that money. But the government of the colony would be under the crown's control. The company refused this compromise. They already had those farms. They already had that money coming to them from every sale. And they had control of the government. Why should they give any of that up? It wasn't a compromise to them. It was taking some of what they already had and telling them they should be thankful that he doesn't take more. Well, in this, they were right. It was taking some of what they already had. But they also should have been thankful that he wasn't taking more. Because when the company refused, the king did take more. And he also took the stuff he was going to let the company keep. It would now all belong to the king. The offer and rejection went like this. A special meeting was called where everyone who owned part of the Virginia Company would be present. In this meeting, the king told them of the compromise he had offered. Everyone knew they would lose one thing if they accepted the compromise, and lose everything if they rejected the compromise. But they were fighting for something more important, something higher than themselves. They were fighting to protect democracy. They were also fighting for the right of English citizens to stand up to their king. The company knew that it didn't have much time before the king made another move. So it ran to Parliament and asked them to give the company their full support against the king taking control of the Virginia government. 7 months after the vote, the matter was up for discussion in Parliament. But before the matter could be considered, Parliament received a message from the king warning them that if they got involved, it would only make fighting among the company's members worse, and that he, the king, would be taking it upon himself to settle the welfare of the colony. So don't get involved. Parliament kinda sorta wasn't happy about this, but it decided that it was best not to refuse the king, and the company was left to its own defense. While this was going on, the king had attorneys write a legal document that basically said, "By what right do you have to govern the colony?" and sent it to the company. The company had to answer this type of question in court. The company knew that all hopes of resisting the king and keeping the colony were gone, but it wasn't going to go down without a fight. So it hired its own attorneys to argue with the king's attorneys in court. The case came before the court on June 26, 1624, only 1 month after Parliament had refused to help, and 2 years after the massacre in Virginia. This is where things get a little interesting. The Virginia Company had to answer to the court in a very specific way within a certain amount of time. The court found that there was a mistake the company had made in the paperwork it had given to the court, and so they ruled that the company's paperwork wasn't really complete in the way it was legally required to have been completed, and that the company's charter of Virginia was therefore canceled. This goes to the idea of having a certain amount of time to respond to things in court, and you have to respond in a certain way. And if you don't respond in the right way, in the right amount of time, it's legally looked at as though you didn't respond at all. So to the court in England, because the Virginia Company had made the mistake in their paperwork, it was looked at as though they didn't fill out any paperwork. And the deadline was already over, so therefore they couldn't legally argue anything. The Virginia Company faded out of existence and Virginia became a royal colony, no longer owned by a company. With the new king now in charge of the colony and nobody in his way, he made new efforts for the colony to produce iron, glass, and other things England still desperately needed. But Virginia was still a terrible place for those things to be found, and the war with the natives made it dangerous to try and go out and get those things in places where it could be found. Tobacco remained the only thing that people could really make money at to support their families in the colony. All classes grew it. The lower class grew and sold it themselves, while the upper class and the governor had servants and slaves to produce the tobacco for them. Virginia was so much the land of small tobacco farmers that it took more than 100 years before it created a town worth mentioning. This growing of tobacco was very time-consuming and required a lot of hands to produce. By this time, slavery had already started in Virginia. It wouldn't really become a major part of life there until around 1680. For now, in 1624, there were 21 slaves in Virginia. This number increased slowly over time, but the cruelty of slavery wouldn't become a widespread form of labor in Virginia until the 1680s, when slaves would be the ones doing this work, and Virginia would become a land of large farmers, having pushed all of the small ones out. So for now, it was almost entirely English immigrants and indentured servants doing the work of growing tobacco. Now the king was set to profit from all of the sales of tobacco. None of it would go to the Virginia Company any longer. The king winning in court and gaining control over the Virginia colony brought on the next chapter of Virginia's history, royal governors. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we discuss the first royal governor and the fight for democracy as a royal colony. Subscribe so you don't miss the next episode and comment your thoughts on this episode below. See you next time on Why Wars Happen.